James Reel 3?
As I said, Five Column had got across, but we had more trouble. Because after the railway, by this time, of course, we were very short of rations. We hadn't had a supply drop for some time. And Calvert was obviously wanted to have a supply drop before he went across the river. he decided on a feint. He decided he arranged for a supply dropping, and then he decided he would cross the Mesa River, which leads into the Irrawaddy, of course. He would cross the river openly and go in a different direction. At the same time, he sent me with a couple of sections of Gurkhas and a Karen, a Jemadar from the Burma Rifles, to recce the route he would take after the supply drop and to see if it was fit for mules and horses. That's what happened. The supply drop was arranged. He went off. And I found myself in my first sort of independent command in my life. And I felt a bit scared, I must admit. And I had to take this couple of sections of us we went across, went along in this patrol looking for things, and had to spend the night out there and then come back and meet the column when they returned for the supply drop. Well, it all worked out all right, and we had our supply drop, and then we set off for the Irrawaddy. And the important thing, of course, was to get across the Irrawaddy without the Japs knowing. So we marched most of that day, rested for a while, then all that night, and we crossed the river, Mesa River, a couple of times to throw people off the scent and so on. And eventually, I suppose in the early hours, we reached this sort of jungle-covered hill where we stopped for rest. And the order was, nobody was to move out to the perimeter. That had to be absolute time. Well, just about daybreak, there was a fusillade of fire. And the whole column, in about a couple of minutes, in fact, Calvert was amazed, the whole column was ready to move out. And we discovered that a Gurkha and a Karen from the Burma had very stupidly gone down to the river to get some water, because we were very short of water at the time. We hadn't had time to fill up bottles and so on. And they'd been seen by a Japanese patrol. So they came rushing back. Well, there was no time for Calvert to do anything to them then. And subsequently, they never got punished. But we just moved out very quickly. And leaving booby traps. Calvert was a great chap for leaving booby traps and cabs for the Japanese. Well, we hadn't gone very far when we heard mortar fire on the hill and the shouts of the Japanese charging the position, and then a couple of blasts for booby traps going off, which pleased us no end. However, what it meant now was that Calvert had to try and get to the Irrawaddy and throw the Japs off our track. So we had a very nasty 24 hours where he, like a fox, he went one way and then the other and so on. And then, eventually, I suppose it must have been about midnight or the early hours of the morning, we stopped for a long time. And as you know, I was the rear guard commander at the back, and I didn't know what quite was happening. And eventually we came along, we reached a whole lot of elephant grass, which is very tall, thick, nasty stuff. And people were sort of going very... So I wanted to find out what was happening, so I managed to get past the mules and things, which was not always very easy, because you can manage with their panniers, and they always seemed to know you were coming, and they seemed to deliberately give you a bump as you went past. Anyway, I arrived, and I found that we, in fact, were crossing a chong, a sort of river, a small river, which fed into the Irrawaddy, and it was formed a sort of an island, and the other side of this island was the huge Irrawaddy River. It's all darkness, of course. So I thought, oh, what the hell? So anyway, I was waiting there, and suddenly I heard mortar bombs about a mile or so off. And I thought, gosh, now what will I do? So anyway, so I crossed the, waded past, across the river, this, and passed the column, and got into this, the other side of this, more elephant grass, and they got into a big open space. And there, the whole, the column all collapsed, utter exhaustion, because we'd been, you know, for 24 hours or more, we hadn't slept or anything. And everybody was flat out, and as people went on, they were just flat there. So I rushed around, and eventually I found Calvert. So I woke him up. What's the matter? I said, the Japs are mortaring us. He said, I know, which took the wind out of my sails. He said, oh, he said, they don't know we're here. And I believed him, of course. I think he was probably true, too. At that time, they probably didn't know we were there. They knew we were trying to cross the river. He said, you stay by the Chong, he said, with your platoon, and form a rear guard. And then he went back to sleep. So, of course, I had to fight my way back, and eventually I got back to the crossing. And by that time, my platoon had come up, you see, but only two sections, the Jemadar and the other section, I didn't realize it, had got past me in the dark. So anyway, I told the two sections, right, we stay here. So the picture is, you have this 200-yard chong, thick elephant grass one side, thick elephant grass the other side, for a few hundred yards, and then this open space with the whole column absolutely flat out exhausted. Well, about 2 hours later, I was trying to get a cat nap. My Havildar, or sergeant, woke me up. He said, come along, sir, quietly. So we went to the edge. We were in this elephant grass, of course, which completely hid us. And looking down there, I could see this Jap soldier. He's probably a Jap officer, I should think, but he had a sort of loincloth thing on and a cap with a white handkerchief thing at the back. And he was looking right across to where the camp was, where the rest of the people were. He didn't know where I was. So the Havala says, shall I kill him? Now there was I at 19, and I was, I only had a very basic army training. And I was faced with this terrible dilemma. And I thought to myself, I could see the whole column just, in this open space, quite vulnerable. At the same time, the Japanese didn't know where I was. And I thought, now if I shoot him, and they're going to open fire on the column, they're not only open fire on the column, they'll open fire on me, and my position and my tactical position would have gone. So I said, no. In the end, it did turn out to be the right decision, but I mean, it was a very ticklish one. I didn't know what to do. So I wrote a note to Calvert to tell him what was happening, and sent it with a runner, and he rushed off there. When he arrived, Calvert wasn't there. Calvert and Lockett had gone on horses early in the morning to the other side of the island to see if they could find boats. But luckily, the little Gurkha got hold of George Silcock, who, as soon as he read the note, realized, and he at once began to get the column into position. And they were almost in position when the Japanese opened fire. So, and with the first burst of machine gun fire, we had, out of 350 people, there were only, I think, five casualties. Whereas, if they'd all been crowded together, it would have been a lot worse. However, the Japanese didn't know where I was. And so, my Bren gunner, myself, I think, we had once fired into them. And after a bit of a ding-dong, we put them out of action. At the same time, of course, Silcock had managed to get his lot together, and they were firing mortar bombs. And then the Japs realized, with one machine gun out of action, realized that unless they got rid of me and my lot, they wouldn't be able to come across the river in any strength to attack the column. So, of course, they came down opposite us in the elephant grass and started firing. And the number two, Gurkha, he was very badly injured. But nobody else was hit in the first burst. And then we had this fire, we had this battle across this 200-yard thing. They were in thick elephant grass the other side. We were in elephant grass this side. And there was no protection. I mean, only grass. But we could hardly see them, they could hardly see us. But we got the better of them, and in fact, we wiped them out in the end. And at the same time, the mortar bombs coming from the other side did that. So then there was dead quiet. And it was obvious afterwards that we had, in fact, completely wiped them out, which was quite remarkable. And which if they'd known where I was, I think the situation had been quite different. But we had wiped them out. Of course, we didn't realize at the time. I mean, we had to think. And I sort of thought to myself, well, whatever happens, reinforcements are bound to come up. So, anyway, then Calvert suddenly appeared, you see. I'd gone down with my Havildar down into the, out of the cover, down the bottom, because I decided, and I was scared stiff by decision, I decided that we all really ought to go across the other side to make quite certain that there were no Japs in the position. Anyway, Calvert suddenly appeared, all stocky, you know, right out in the open. "What are you doing out in the open?" he said to me. He always stands in the open himself. So I said, well, I didn't want to tell him I was going to cross the river. I said, oh, I'm getting all the men in the right positions. "Oh," he said, "oh, well, come on now," I said, "get into position here." He said, "we're going to cross the river. I want you to stay here and keep the Japs at bay while we cross the river." And off he went. And now I was faced with the most terrible situation, because I had this wounded Gurkha, and he was very bad. He was dying. He was terribly in pain and everything else. And there I was, 19, having to make another terrible decision, and that was whether to give him a lethal dose of morphia or not. And I had my Gurkha Havildar and the Bren gunner, who was Sher Bahadur Ali, who I will tell you about later. I'm going to meet him in Nepal in a couple of months' time. And we looked at this fellow, and he was in terrible agony and pain, and he was obviously shot to bits. So eventually I made the decision, and I gave him a lethal dose of morphia, and he went out very quietly. And the Gurkhas were quite amazing. They just accepted it, and he was covered with a blanket. Anyway, we stayed there for some time until eventually a message came back for me to go and join George Silcock at the main column. And when I got there, I found that only George was there and a section of Gurkhas and some Karens, and all the rest had gone off. And to my horror, of course, I found there was another very badly, seriously wounded Gurkha there as well. And I said to George, well, I just have to do it, you see. And he looked at me as though he wanted me to give him as well. And I said, there's no way I'm going to do it twice. So he got himself together, and then he had to give the chap a little dose of morphia. But we were very lucky, I think, that out of 350, we lost, I think it was three killed and four wounded. So anyway, we moved off down towards where the main column was, and meanwhile Calvert had started organizing the crossing. There were no Japs around. We realized after we'd wiped them out, and there was, however, he wasn't to know that, but we were lucky we got some boats, and most of the Gurkhas we got across. And then Calvert decided that he would have to try and only get across sufficient mules to carry the essential equipment, like the wireless sets and the medium machine guns and the 3-inch mortars, things like that. And the rest would just have to be abandoned. So, anyway, he sent me across to organize an ambush the other side to protect in case the Japs came from there. And then, by about darkness, Calvert and a lot of the other officers, they'd worked like stink to try and get a lot of these mules and things across. Very hard work, never knowing if the Japs were going to arrive or not. But eventually, they gave up and decided, right, we've got enough mules now. I think it was cut down to probably about 20 mules out of the 80 or so, none the horses. and the muleteers who no longer had mules were formed into platoons, which might give the impression that it strengthened us, but it didn't, because, as I say, most of them were recruits. The muleteers had never fired a rifle anyway. anyway, eventually, we set off into the interior, and I came in the back with my platoon, and we marched onto the early morning, and then this is the moment which I think started the rot. We suddenly saw this bullock cart with straw, and on it were the four wounded Gurkhas who were going to be left in a village. And I think the Gurkhas sort of looked at them, and I think that was the very first time that they really realized what would happen if they got wounded. And I think it went through them with the shock of a bullet. You see, they'd accepted giving a lethal dose. That was all right, because the chap was dying and the officer Saab was doing the best for him. But this was something quite different. They suddenly realized, you see, what it was. And that's when the seed was sown. And it didn't appear straight away, but appeared later. but when we moved off, I felt very upset. In fact, I can still see that bullock cart to this day with those four people lying there. I did hear later that they were fortunate in that they eventually, you know, were made prisoners and eventually came out. They were very fortunate because in most cases, the Japanese never took wounded prisoners. They nearly always put the bayonet in, which was why another reason why if you were left in a Burmese village, there was never a guarantee that you were wounded, that you would be actually looked after. But Calvert left a note, and apparently whoever the Japanese officer was in command there happened to be an honourable sort of person, and he looked after these four wounded Gurkhas, and they were lucky. But in other cases, I know that some of them were not so lucky. Well, that was the Irrawaddy battle.
Then what happened?
Shortly afterwards, Wingate himself crossed the Irrawaddy with the columns who were around him. As I said, he had 7, 5, and 8 columns with him. And they all crossed the Irrawaddy without any trouble. But now that was the big mistake he made. Because once he crossed the Irrawaddy, we were in dead trouble. For two reasons. One, which he didn't realize himself at the time, but neither did anybody else. It was a dry zone, and at that time of the year, there was very little water. You had to really dig to get water. And the second reason was that until then, we were all far apart in jungle. The Japs had difficulty in getting hold of us. We were now in an area where we were probably within 15 miles of each other, sort of thing. We had the Shweli River, which comes down and like an arc and cuts in and comes and flows into the Irrawaddy, one side. On the other side, we had roads, which didn't have been made even, down into the Irrawaddy. And then we had the Irrawaddy itself, which was the lid to the trap, because the Japs took all the boats from the eastern side away and formed convoys, so that to get back was going to be very difficult. So they now knew where we were, they knew we were supplied by air, and then they started gearing all their troops to try and smash us. And that was a situation tactically. However, Wingate didn't quite realize that at the time. And he gave orders to Calvert to move on. He gave orders to Calvert that he would be joined by 5 column, commanded by Bernard Ferguson, and the 2 columns, under the command of Calvert, as a local lieutenant colonel, would proceed to the Gotek Viaduct and destroy it. Now, this pleased Calvert very much, because during the retreat from Burma, he'd been stationed at the Gotek Viaduct. This was a viaduct, took a railway over a very deep gorge, and in a vital part of the railway system, which if it was destroyed, would cause a lot of trouble. And he'd been ready to blow this up himself some year before, when orders came, no, leave it. And so he hadn't. Anyway, he was now given this task of going to blow it up. So we set off in that direction. We had to cross the Shweli River, you'll see, to get to it. So before he realized, of course, that he'd have to have a good supply drop and give everybody a good rest, because it was going to be a very dangerous operation indeed. In fact, I reckon if we had gone, I certainly would not be sitting here today. I don't think any of us would. However, he ordered a supply drop at a chong where we were able to dig up a lot of water, and he decided we'd have a long rest of 3 days or 4 days or so, and we had an airdrop and so on. And one of the remarkable things about this was he, up till this time, we'd all, the officer had all sort of at night had slept with their various groups, you see, and he decided we should all come into headquarters together. And and I was sitting with my friend Alec Gibson. Alec was one of the three from the 8 Gurkha Rifles who came with me. He and I were in the same column, but Ian McHorton, of course, had gone, as I say, into the other column. And we started to sing some popular songs, you see, and then we stopped, thinking that Cabot might be annoyed. He said, no, come on, sing up. And so there was this remarkable sight of, I suppose, 8 British officers, so most of them bearded and looking very scruffy, singing all the popular songs, 300 miles inside Japanese lines, regardless. And so we had a most enjoyable camping scene. Again, this is because, as I say, Calvert was allowed to work independently, and also because he was a man who didn't believe in being dictated to by the enemy. However, we left. He decided to leave, I think it was 3 days' rations in a cache there, hidden away. And we were given 4 days' ration ourselves, each person. And we set off. The idea was to cross a chong called the Namit, and then to get to the Shweli, and then eventually to rendezvous with Bernard Ferguson and go for the Gotek Viaduct. Well, we reached this chong at night, and first thing the next morning, there were shots. So, apparently, Calvert had sent a small patrol of Burma rifles to do a recce, and they'd bumped some Japanese and fired at them without hitting anything. So, Calvert decided that, he would set an ambush on the road which led between a place called Pago and another place that I can't remember at the moment, but where there was known to be a Japanese garrison. And he thought there'd obviously be some sort of activity there, and he thought perhaps ambush them might give them a fright. So, for some reason, he selected me to put the ambush. I was given a platoon of Gurkhas and a section of British commandos under Company Sergeant Major Bob Blaine, a very tough character, very tough man. So we set off and reached this track, cart track, and I laid my ambush, and I put myself in one spot in front, and I put the Jemadar and to one wing and Blaine the other, and one behind us. And we waited there. And very soon, a Burmese villager came along. So we caught hold of him. And I had a Karen with me to translate. And the chap said that he was going from one village to the other. So I thought, this man's suspicious. So we looked in his bag, and there was a letter there, which was written in Japanese. And then the chap said, oh, yes, he'd been told to take this letter from one village to the garrison command, the other one. So I wrote a little note to Calvert, and I suppose by this time, so impressed with him, I began to think like him, I think. So I very cheekily wrote, may I suggest that you come out and join us for attack on Spago, you see, and sent it off to him. But shortly after, he got this note, and he decided, yes, that's a good idea. We'll go and have a good bash at them. And he wrote on it, you suggest you, he put exclamation mark, and he gave to the runner to bring it back to me. But as he was getting organized, a Japanese patrol walked into my ambush. There must have been about 8 or 9 of them, I suppose. And they walked straight into my position. And, as I say, because a lot of the Gurkhas were not fully trained, and one person perhaps fired a bit too early, so we didn't kill them all, because most of them, I think. But I realized at once that perhaps one or two might have been left. And sure enough, the chap started firing rifle shots at us. So I had the Havildar with me, Tilbury Topper. I'll give you his name because he's a very brave man, Tilbury Topper. And he and I agreed that we had to get rid of this chap somehow. So I suggested he fired some grenades at the 65 grenades at that position. And I borrowed the Tommy gun from the Nike. Well, I worked myself round the back, which I did, and I found this one Jap there, who I put out of action. And then I came back and joined the Havildar. And we discussed the situation, and I thought, well, he and I both agreed we should really move out. But because of the note I'd sent, and because knowing Calvert, I thought he might be coming, we decided we ought to stay. And then just then, of course, all hell burst loose, because the whole great force of Japanese came out of the village behind us to the scene. They struck the ambush behind us, but there was only a little section there, of course. And then, they, as usual, they broke up and they came round the flanks. So